This is Mike Dilt with the Relax Back UK show on UK Health Radio, your global real feel-good radio station. On the Relax Back UK show, we explore all kinds of health topics, so keep listening and enjoy the ride.
Hi, this is Mike Dilk and thank you for joining me on this week's Relax Back UK show. In making the show, I continue to be amazed at what medical science can do for people, and this week's show is absolutely no exception.
So the way we do this is we use tiny platinum-coated wires, so thinner than the inside of your biro pen, going deep into the brain, and we take great care and attention to put these in safely and accurately. Then we connect it all up to a battery, which usually sits just underneath the collarbone.
Deep brain stimulation, been described there, is a treatment for Parkinson's disease. Mike Hart is a consultant neurosurgeon at St George's Hospital, London, and Abdul Rashid is a patient who's had the deep brain stimulation procedure. We have a fascinating chat with them, and then the next topic is multiple sclerosis and MS nurses, with the Health Professional Director of the MS Trust, Paru Naik, and Becky Wash, who has MS.
There is no doubt that this is about quality of life. This doesn't stop people from working. This doesn't stop people from living their lives. However, they need to adapt and they need to learn how to adapt to that.
So please do stay tuned for a great show. Thank you.
The station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
So, we start with Parkinson's disease and focus on DBS, or deep brain stimulation, which is a treatment which has helped an awful lot of people. The guests are neurosurgeon Mike Hart and Abdul Rashid, who has Parkinson's and was diagnosed in 2013. I started by asking Mike, what is Parkinson's and what causes it?
Yeah, so Parkinson's disease is a neurodegenerative condition, meaning that key parts of the brain progressively die off over time. So while we are still trying to understand exactly why people get Parkinson's, it's a highly active research area. The current belief is that it's a complex mixture of environmental triggers and a genetic susceptibility. In terms of how this manifests, it typically affects the motor system, so that's problems with movement, and the key features are that of tremor, slowness, stiffness, and difficulty walking. But we now know that there are many other features, and in fact over 40 symptoms are now recognised affecting all manner of diseases of the nervous system.
Okay, 40 symptoms, right. I hadn't realised it was quite as sort of wide-ranging as that. Abdul, you've been living with Parkinson's disease for a while now. Have you experienced any of these sort of 40 other symptoms?
Well, I with regard to the 40 other symptoms, I think part of the problem of that is the diagnosis, you know, but because I had the symptoms for a very long time, and then it took almost up to 6 years before I was identified as a Parkinson sufferer. So I do suffer from slow movement, rigidity, fluctuation of ability to do things. Small tasks becomes really difficult to do, and it almost the body shuts down. Really, feels like somebody kind of switched off the electricity, and your body's not working anymore.
All right, and it's surprisingly prevalent, isn't it? How many people actually suffer from this?
Yeah,
does anyone know?
So it's approximately 145,000 people in the United Kingdom and 10 million in the world. So we're looking at 18,000 new people every year, and every hour, two more people being diagnosed. If you look at a group of people alive now, one out of every 37 people will have Parkinson's disease in their lifetime.
All right. So it is a worldwide problem, as you said. Does it tend to be a first world problem? Are there any differences in countries and how frequently it appears in different countries, different parts of the world?
Yeah, you're right. It's a condition that tends to occur more frequently as one gets older. This is in keeping with lots of neurodegenerative conditions. The longer you live, the more time there is for degeneration to occur. So countries where the life expectancy is longer will have more people with Parkinson's disease in them. And in addition, countries whose life expectancy is increasing, what should also expect to see more people with Parkinson's disease being diagnosed.
Right. Okay. So it's becoming more and more of a worldwide problem as hopefully all our life expectancies increase somewhat.
That's right. Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. So now, I mean, there are drugs that can control it and help with it. But I think sometimes as time goes on, they become sort of slightly less effective. So other courses of action might be needed. So Abdul, has that been your experience?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, initially I started with medication. And as the symptoms kind of progressed, I took more and more of the medication. But there were mainly three problems with the medication in my case.
Tell me. Of course,
different people react to this medication differently, and then problem number one was that the I could not really have a good night's sleep, with the medication, So I was almost what they call on, I was almost active all the time, and my mind would not switch off at night, and I had problems sleeping. Secondly, it was the what they call the fluctuation between on time and off time. So, and that could happen instantly. So I'll be talking to you, and I'm okay, and then suddenly my body will kind of shut down, and I won't be able to function. I won't be able to walk. I freeze and so forth. But what I understood then is the medication really they could not. That they were having inconsistency in terms of the effect they were having on my body, and as I come to the end of a dosage period, then I will have my symptoms will get a lot worse.
Okay.
And the third thing was that the medication itself they have side effects, negative side effects, and in my case was the sleep, and also. I was addicted to shopping.
You were addicted to shopping?
Yes, which I don't like shopping, to be honest. But suddenly I was buying stuff that that I didn't need, and it was identified as I developed kind of a compulsive
kind of disorder.
Disorder, almost, buying, and I understand also the medication. It wasn't my case, but I understand that some people gamble or you have a negative.
So this is these sorts of things are a known side effect of some of the drugs for Parkinson's, are they?
Yes, I believe so. I mean, Mike is in a better place to comment on this.
Yeah, that's absolutely the case.
Right. Okay. Interesting. So, anyway, you presumably, along with the doctors that were helping you, decided to go down a different route. So, what was that route? Explain to us a bit about the what happened next.
Well, taking more medication in my case wasn't really sustainable, you know, because the
side your house would have filled up with rubbish you didn't need from being a shopaholic. Yeah.
Well, more rubbish, yes. Yes. So, so that was really sustainable. And but the other thing is, I was reacting positively to the medication, and that's a kind of an indication that you are almost a good candidate for, well, among other things, among other tests they carry out, what I understood is that if you are responding well to medication, then that you are a good candidate for deep brain stimulation.
Right. So this was the next step in your sort of treatment course. This sounds. So just to someone who I don't really know about Parkinson's, and I'm not really a medical person at all, deep brain stimulation does sound quite a scary sort of phrase. So perhaps, Mike, you can explain what exactly it is and whether we should be a bit wary of it.
So deep brain stimulation is exactly what it sounds like. It's providing a small amount of electricity to deep centers in the brain to treat symptoms of Parkinson's disease and other conditions too. So the way we do this is we use tiny platinum-coated wires, so thinner than the inside of your biro pen, going deep into the brain, and we take great care and attention to put these in safely and accurately. Then we connect it all up to a battery, which usually sits just underneath the collarbone, and make all the wires under the skin so you can barely tell unless you were looking for it. So this battery gives little pulses of electricity to the brain, and this helps reset some of the pathways in the brain that have been affected by Parkinson's disease to make people's symptoms better and hopefully improve their quality of life.
Okay, goodness. Right, loads of questions about that, because I mean, it sounds amazing, fascinating, everything. But when your patient is on the operating table, presumably he's under a general anaesthetic, how do you know which bit of the brain to put the wire into?
Yeah, great question. We take a lot of care to make sure it's exactly right, the targets we're aiming
I'm
for.
I'm glad to hear that, by the way. I'm sure everyone is as
yeah.
well. But...
And it's a challenge that we like. You know, we spend a lot of care and attention doing it. It's very satisfying because the targets we're aiming for are 1 to 2 millimeters across, something like that, centimeters deep in the brain, next to some very vital structures. So imaging is very key. We use a lot of advanced imaging, so MRI scans, CT scans to see where we are. We use a special frame often, which is attached to the head, a bit like a halo. And this helps get our coordinates right, a bit like using a compass. And then the final thing is people can do the surgery awake. It's absolutely fine. And then you can map out using electricity exactly where you are. And so the patient's awake on the table, you give electricity, and you can find out what type of functions are nearby, so you can put your magic wire, as you call it, in exactly the right place.
Okay, so during the operation, you can kind of get a feedback loop from the patient.
Absolutely, so that's well recognised now. Every centre that does this operation does it slightly differently. Some places do it fully asleep, some places do it awake. I've done both. They're both absolutely fine.
In fact, thinking about it, I'm sure I've seen something on the TV with a patient having an operation, and he was asked to, I think, recite a nursery rhyme.
Mm-hmm.
And as time went on, his reciting of the nursery rhyme got better and quicker with fewer pauses, and they were using that as a feedback loop. So, yeah, right, that's the correct part of the brain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. That sounds absolutely right. The amazing thing about the brain is it doesn't actually feel pain itself, so you can be very comfortable having somebody operating on it.
I suppose that is nature, because, you know, as we've developed, if something is kind of rooting around in your brain, it's probably game over, so you don't need to know about it.
I've got to say, I hadn't thought of it like that, but I like it.
Okay, so Abdul, did you have a general anaesthetic when you had this done to you?
Oh, yes, I was asleep, yes.
Okay.
I didn't want to see any of it.
But the surgeon got the right part of the brain for you. And,
yes, they did, and I took part of The operation was in two parts. First, on the Friday, they put the machines in, what I call the electrical rods in my head. And then the weekend, the wires that it's kind of coming out of my brain were that was used for some advanced experiments which I took part of. Mm-hmm. And then on the Monday they finished up the job by connecting the putting the battery in my chest and connecting the battery to the machine in my head.
Okay, so does the battery in your chest, does that deliver a tiny electric pulse to your brain the whole time, or does it somehow know when it's required and just deliver the pulse then?
I can answer that. So traditionally it gives you a constant pulse throughout the day, and that's exactly what you want. You want it to smooth out your treatment. So Abdul talked about these times when you felt on and off. That's what we're trying to ameliorate and have more on time, less off time, particularly at night, for example, when you wouldn't be taking your tablets. Now, the second part is you talked about this feedback when the device can sense how you are and can adjust itself, for example, over time, day to day, because symptoms fluctuate day to day, and then over years as things change. And that's exactly the sort of research that Abdul was talking about, what we're doing, learning how to listen to the brain and then adjust the stimulation.
Is it sophisticated enough that it can adjust the feedback to the brain sort of without any intervention?
We're just about at the stage when that technology is coming out and learning to use it, and it's going to be refined. So I think that's going to be a big breakthrough in the coming years.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Now, Abdul, have you stopped your shopping for odd things?
Yes, actually, that did work, yes. I cut back on the medication, so I'm no longer buying useless stuff on the internet.
That's good. But on a slightly more serious note, I mean, all sorts of, you know, medical interventions can have side effects, but two questions, really. Can side effects happen from this sort of intervention? And also, have you personally experienced any, Abdul?
You mean the side effects of the DBS?
Yes. Do you start feeling other symptoms? You know, does it, I don't know, affect your balance or anything like that? Hmm.
Not really, no. I mean, initially I was a little bit concerned about sleep. So I thought, well, if there's a machine in my head, working all the time, you know, that could affect my sleep. But it didn't actually. My sleep improved. So there were no negative side effects of the DBS.
Very good. All right, sounds like a big success story in your case. Mike, do any other patients have side effects?
Yeah, you're right. Like any treatment, there can be side effects. And it's part of my job and others to minimize these side effects, make it as safe as possible. Nevertheless, when any person is going in with or going ahead with the treatment, you need to make sure they're going in with their eyes open and have had all the possibilities discussed with them. And that's one of the strengths of the procedure, is there is time to discuss, have conversations, and allow the person with Parkinson's to make up their mind about how they view the potential risks and benefits for them as an individual.
Okay, but so, I mean, do you have any examples of the sort of side effects there might be, or is that a bit of an unfair question? Because actually it could be very varied.
It is very variable. So it's tricky to answer that exactly.
Sure. Well, actually, one thing that I should have asked earlier on, you were talking about sometimes treatment has to be tweaked a little bit, and you were getting to the point where the machinery, if you like, could do its own tweaking. But if you have to go back and tweak it just to make it work a little bit better, what does that actually mean? Does that mean changing the kind of the electric current that's going to the brain, or do you have to change the position of the wires in the brain?
Yeah, good question. So we can actually change where the current is going in the brain already. So we can direct it in different areas from these wires. So they can go out in like different wedges, depending on where you want to stimulate. And the battery itself is very clever already. It can give you more electricity, but it can also give it to you in slightly different ways and different timings as well. It's not just a battery in that regard. It's what we call a pulse generator. So we're still learning how these different settings from the battery can affect people at different times. Changing the wires itself is more difficult. That's a new operation, essentially. But learning to feedback depending on how the disease changes or symptom changes and changing the battery settings, we can do that with the system in.
I mean, this is absolutely fascinating stuff. Now, Abdul, I did read, and we have this in common, that you're a civil engineer, is that right?
Yes, my first degree was civil engineering, and I did work for a bit in civil engineering before I changed into information technology, yes.
Okay, so now what I was leading up to is, have you been able to go back to work?
No, my condition really didn't allow me to go back into work, no.
Okay, but you can lead a full, useful and productive life, work to one side.
It's a kind of a scaled back, curtailed, you know. I mm-hmm. find it difficult, for example, to go out by myself because I'm worried about the occasions where my body shuts down, or so if I'm going somewhere now, I need someone to be with me, and also at home I need someone to kind of to help me with a few things.
Okay.
I'm not fully functional as an independent person as I was before the disease, and you know.
But do you feel that having the DBS treatment has helped you?
Yes, well, it did help me, but I'm also optimistic into the future that maybe, you know, because it has a different settings and different programs, maybe we'll be able to tweak it a bit more for me to reach an optimum position in terms of the of controlling the symptoms. Sure. I'm still having the the symptoms, and DBS is not claiming that they will do away with these symptoms, but I haven't reached yet a point whereby I'm feeling that I'm a lot better.
Okay. All right. Well, look, good luck with that. And if people are listening to this and, you know, want to find out a little bit more, either because they have Parkinson's or a member of their family or a loved one has Parkinson's, something like that, or actually just because it is fascinating, where can people find a little more information? What would be a good resource? I'm not sure who would be best to answer that.
I think Mike would be better.
Okay.
Yeah, I can answer that one. So fortunately, there are many excellent support groups and charities out there who have an abundance of resources. So, for example, some helpful links are parkinsons.org.uk, cureparkinsons.org.uk, and workforgood.co.uk. There's also PD Connect helpline, where people can call you back to discuss over the telephone. And no doubt there are many others as well. So apologies for any I may have inadvertently missed. We work hard to try and have local open days, support groups and events on as well. So we're making a real effort to reach out to the Parkinson's community and also to help supply as much education as possible. There really shouldn't be any limit to how much education is out there.
Good. Right. Well, look, thank you very much indeed to you both. So thank you, Abdul, and thank you, Mike, for chatting about this today. It's much appreciated.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
It used to be hard to find the world's most wonderful alcohol-free drinks. Not anymore. Whether it's a health thing, a lifestyle thing, or you're trying new things, make sure you save yourself from the guessing game of the supermarket shelves and shop with zerozilchzip.co.uk for the world's most carefully curated range of alcohol-free beers, wines, spirits, and more. Health Radio listeners can save 5% with the code HEALTH5. Visit zerozilchzip.co.uk or click our banner on the UK Health Radio website. Discover alcohol freedom with Zero Zilch Zip. Because nothing's better.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
The next guests on the show are Paru Naik, she's Health Professional Director of the MS Trust, and Becky Wash. She has MS and she's based in Romford. Now, the main drive of our chat is nursing and how good MS nursing can really help people get on and keep a fun, fulfilled, creative, useful life while living at home and really learning to live with MS. So it's mainly about the nursing side of MS, but I did start off by asking Paru if she could just tell us or remind us exactly what MS, multiple sclerosis, is.
Yes, well, basically MS is a condition that affects the nerves in the brain and the spinal cord. It's a lifelong condition. It's usually diagnosed in people in their 20s and 30s, but it can be at any age. It can cause a wide variety of symptoms, including eyesight problems, fatigue, balance problems, altered sensations, cognitive issues. We've just done a self-reported estimate of how many people are living with this, and it's showing there's 140,000 people living in the United Kingdom, and it affects more women than it does men. There's a wide range of disease-modifying treatments. There's 14 plus now on the market, so it's complicated. But there's currently no cure. It's a debilitating disease.
And women suffer more than men?
Yeah.
Does anyone know why that is?
I don't have the facts around that one, but
that's just bad luck. Bad luck for women as far as MS is concerned. All right. And so 140,000 in the UK. Does it tend to be a first world disease, or is it prevalent all over the globe? That might be an unfair question.
Well, I mean, it's certainly a problem in the United Kingdom, but it is north of the equator as a problem. But there are some statistics show that as there's as people migrate into the Western world, that they are starting to suffer from multiple sclerosis.
Oh, really? Okay.
So it could be an environmental thing. There are many factors.
Right. All right. And so you mentioned lots of different symptoms. The next question might be better to Becky, actually. Do those symptoms tend to change from person to person, or also from time? Do they change with time as well for the same person?
Yeah, I mean, I have a friend who's got MS, and our MS has similarities, but it's never the same. Everybody's experience is different. It's completely unique to you. But, you know, it's nice to be able to share similar experiences, but, yeah, it's never identical.
And does it change for you from, you know, month to month, week to week, or even, you know, day to day?
Yeah, definitely. So, you know, one day I can have, like, really bad nerve pain in my leg. Next day I'm completely fine. It might be pain in the morning and then not in the afternoon, or it could be a whole month. You know, it just... You never know when something's going to happen and when it's going to come up. But for me, it's all about managing my condition to prevent that from happening.
Right. So do you kind of get a feeling when something might be about to happen and you can try and head it off at the pass? Is that part of the learning to deal with it? Doesn't look
not
like
really.
It's the way you're struggling.
Once it's there, it's there. And you just got to manage it from that point, basically. At the moment, I have a pain that comes in my leg, and that might flare up a little more because I've done more walking than normal. It might be because I'm tired. But it's not necessarily there all the time at the moment, which is great. For some people, it might be there all the time.
Right. Okay. Now, so for people that have this, I mean, we're talking to you from your home. You live at home. You run your own business from home. I can see we're talking to you in your home office.
Yes.
There's a network of MS nurses throughout the UK to help people like you. Is that correct?
Yeah, I've always had an MS nurse. I was diagnosed in 2009. And once I got assigned to my hospital, as it were, I decided I wanted to take disease modifying drugs. And so I was introduced to an MS nurse who helped me. At the time, it was injections. So they showed me how to do that. I don't see the same nurse, but I see a team of nurses. Sometimes it is the same person, and they really help, you know, with the symptoms that I'm going through. They will discuss it with me. At the beginning, I didn't see a nurse very often because I didn't need to. And then when I changed the drugs that I'm on, it meant that I saw a nurse more regularly. So now, well, I started seeing a nurse every 3 months. And then, of course, lockdown came in and that all changed.
So the nurses come to you, do they? Or do you go to them?
No, I go to them, or would have gone to them. At the moment, because of lockdown, it's on the telephone. And that's kind of fine, because normally when I would go to see the nurse, my condition as it is at the moment, I perhaps don't need a physical examination. It's more just a chat and a discussion. But other people might want to see a nurse more in person. But for me, the telephone conversations are fine. The biggest thing for me is just knowing that I can contact them if I need to. If I need to speak to a nurse, they're there. And likewise, the nurse is able to communicate with my GP. And if I have gone to my GP, I mean, on one occasion, I went to my GP to discuss some MS stuff. And they Googled it in front of me. They literally Googled what I was saying. And I just thought,
Well, actually, I can do that.
I can do that.
Yeah,
so,
I could do that from home. Yeah, fair enough. All right. Let me just ask probably Paru a question about the actual nurses. Are these specialist nurses? So what's the training involved? Are they nurses who then decide they want to specialise in MS, or how does it work?
Yeah, that's right. They've trained in general nursing, and then they decide that, you know, multiple sclerosis is the area of specialism they'd like training. We offer a foundation course, which is a 5-day residential course twice a year. We've got a waiting list for it, so we're going to increase the capacity. But, you know, in the early years of training, they do the foundations, and they also network with other like-minded nurses and therapists as well. It's not just nurses. So there's an opportunity there. And then we also have an annual conference. We're about to have a face-to-face conference where I was very excited about it, I have to say. We have over 300 health professionals come together. It's going to be the end of March. And they network. We have a big education program, and they learn from each other. And also they support each other, because one of the things that's really worrying for us is that they're dealing with these increasing caseloads. You know, where there are areas that where one nurse could be looking after 1,000 people with MS. And, you know, that face-to-face interaction and that ongoing support is just not possible for them. So yes, they do need training, and it's available.
Is there a number? Actually, this is probably another impossible question, but I'll ask it anyway. Is there kind of a number of patients that an MS nurse can generally look after?
Yeah, there is. So we've done a calculation around that, and the sustainable caseload is 315. Now, okay. The average NHS England caseload has come out as 472. So that's still much higher wherever you look. Now, 8 in 10 people, as you said, living with MS are in areas where their nurses are carrying much higher caseloads than is possible to maintain. Okay.
So there's a basic requirement for more specialist MS nurses, it sounds like.
There is. There absolutely is. There's 149 needed across the United Kingdom, additional.
Okay, tomorrow. So you could use 149 tomorrow. More nurses tomorrow.
Absolutely, and that's a really good point, because this is not a five-year problem. This is a problem now.
Okay, does that come about because regular nurses aren't volunteering to specialise in it, or it's become, you know, not quite such a thing they want to do, or, you know, what's brought that about? Does anyone know?
It's still attractive to them. They do a fantastic job. They're going above and beyond what's required of them. And so they're exhausted. You know, after COVID, there's certainly burnout, and we're hearing more about that, but being more and more stretched because of the number of patients on their books. Now, the disease-modifying drugs, there's 14 of them. You know, it's taking more of their time. They have to monitor it. And so those with progressive MS are being lost to services. Now, our surveys show that high numbers of nurses are considering leaving MS nurses in the next 5 years. One in three MS nurses are planning to retire the next 5 years, and one in five MS nurses are either considering or actively seeking roles outside of MS, and it may be even outside of nursing. It just means that workforce planning needs to be an important consideration, and that's what we're looking at, training and experience, and taking them from novice to expert.
So something that Becky mentioned that I thought was interesting, she said that in some instances, actually brought about by COVID, quite often you've been chatting to your nurse on the phone, Becky. And you said in some instances that actually worked quite well for you. Does that work quite well for the nurses as well? I'm just wondering if there's a potential opportunity there. So a nurse could deal with more patients if they were like Becky, and she could talk to them on the phone. Is that something you're actively kind of pursuing, Paro?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, virtual versus face-to-face is an NHS consideration and a service consideration. Obviously, within that, it's an individual thing, whether that suits people. You know, if their disability is such that they can't get to a phone or they can't get to a camera and you can't see what's happening with them. And then there's also an urban-rural thing that goes on. So, you know, how do you get out to people who are, you know, in real rural areas when you haven't got capacity? Our statistics show that one in three nurses are able to get out to home visits. So there's a big shortage there. But no, absolutely, this is something that needs to be scoped out and with really clear criteria. So for someone like Becky, yes, absolutely. I think it works really well.
Yeah. And one thing that's become kind of apparent chatting to Becky is that, you know, she runs a business from home. And so as well as being an MS sufferer, you know, she is a contributor to society. Perhaps I shouldn't ask if you pay your taxes, Becky, but I suspect, you know, you run a business and you pay your taxes. And this is partly made possible because you get the help from an MS nurse. So it kind of seems like a very useful thing to keep going. Because, you know, it helps people. And actually, it saves money. And in Becky's instance, makes money for UK PLC, it would appear, in the long run. I can see you're smiling, Parry. Do you kind of agree with me?
Absolutely. I mean, looking at Becky, and I can tell you she definitely pays her taxes. But there is no doubt that this is about quality of life. This doesn't stop people from working. This doesn't stop people from living their lives. However, they need to adapt and they need to learn how to adapt to that and see what the resources are available out there. And also have some guidance and be navigated to other services. It may be social services that need to help. It may be they need help with their pension. It may be that they need help with their working allowance, or living allowance. There are so many things that we can help with. And I think it's really important that they can open up their lives to specialist nurses. This is what happens, you know, and especially we found if they've got a named nurse and it's continuously the same person, they forge a relationship, which is obviously has the professional patient relationship, but they can really help navigate their lives and live them, you know, live to the fullest. It's really important.
Right. And presumably these nurses, if they realize that the patient needs help with something that, you know, isn't quite in their skill set to provide, they can then put them up with the MS Trust. That can help with other things as well.
Absolutely. We have we develop a lot of information, very factual information. This is guided with working with health professionals, and we have an expert team in-house. But we've also got a free inquiry service. So, you can ask questions, whatever you're thinking about, whichever part of your life that you're struggling with. You said we could plug, so I'm going to say it's the 0800 032 3839 number, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5. Leave a message if there's no one on the line. We'll get back to you straight away. and or you can email at ask@mstrust.org.uk. And it's not just for people living with MS. Of course, health professionals, if they're struggling with their caseload, which we've now identified and we will be going out to them, but contact us so that we can help you with a business case, help you with service improvement, and help you, you know, in what you're struggling with. And you can contact us at hbteam@mstrust.org.uk.
Right. I'm going to get you to give those details one more time at the end. But before that, I just want to ask Becky a bit more, going away from your MS, ask you a bit more about your business. Because I can see you are, your office is an awful lot tidier than mine. It looks like your business is very well run.
You can't see down here.
but what do you do? What is your business, Becky?
So my business is called Retro From Scratch. And I set it up a good 11 years ago when I had a full-time job as well and MS. And my job was under threat of redundancy. So I thought, oh, I need a backup plan. And then I managed to keep my job and set up this business, which is making notebooks from recycled books. So like this. So I take old books.
That
and
didn't work terribly well for radio, Becky. You
doesn't
have to
work well for radio. Sorry. So I take old books and I replace the pages inside with diaries, notebooks, planners, you name it, baby books, recipe books, everything.
Okay. And it sounds like it's going quite well.
Yeah, it's been doing very well. So I was able to leave my full-time job to do this. So I'm very fortunate, although it is down to hard work. But part of that as well was because of my MS, to be able to, I can manage my MS so much better working for myself because I haven't got a boss to ask for permission to have time off and things like that. And also it just gives me that freedom to be able to go to appointments and things and not have that worry. So, yeah, it's good.
Fantastic. All right. So does your business have a website? Give that a plug.
It does. It's retrofromscratch.co.uk. And you can see all the things that I make on Instagram, which is Retro From Scratch.
Brilliant. All right. Thank you. OK. So finally, Farid, please, can you just give the details for the MS Trust? If people are listening to this and thinking, right, you know, I need some help or I want to find out a bit more for a family member or a loved one, something like that, what's the best thing for them to do?
So call our inquiry service. It's on 0800 032 3839, Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, or leave a message. Or email ask@mstrust.org.uk.
Okay. And I'll just add that presumably you can use those contact details if you are calling because you're very wealthy and would like to donate some money to the MS Trust.
Well, I was just coming on to that one.
All right, go on then.
Absolutely. So we need 149 additional nurses in the United Kingdom. We pump prime really and put additional nurses in, and we pay 80% of their salary. 80 pence in the pound goes directly to people with MS and supporting these services. So, and we don't have any government funding. So of course we're absolutely reliant on donations. So that will be absolutely brilliant. It won't take too much to actually solve some of these problems.
Very good. Right, Paru and Becky, thank you very much indeed for chatting. I think that you know, it's going to help a lot of people.
Thank you very much to my guests on this week's show. And they were Mike Hart, who's a consultant neurosurgeon at St George's Hospital, London, and Abdul Rashid. He's a Parkinson's patient. Both of them were talking about Parkinson's disease, but in particular DBS, or deep brain stimulation. And then we had Paru Naik, he's the health professional director of the MS Trust, and Becky Wash, who has MS, talking about MS nursing in particular. So thank you very much to them, and of course thank you to you for listening.
That was the Relaxed UK show with me, Mike Dill. Thank you for listening, and please do join us again next time.